Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. Today we continue with the conversation we started last week with three of the four candidates vying for the Democratic Party line for the two at-large Syracuse City Council positions. The primary election will be held September 10th. Joining me are the two candidates that the Democratic Party committee has endorsed, Jeff Wright and Pamela Hunter. The two incumbent Democratic at-large city councilors, Lance Denno and Gene Kessner, were not selected by the party and subsequently chose to mount a primary challenge. Councillor Denno joins us today to complete our panel. Councillor Kessner was also invited to join the panel but did not respond to my initial request and then cited a scheduling conflict once the time and date for the conversation was chosen. Last week, we discussed the political process as it relates to the City Council. Today, we will focus on specific policies affecting the city. Councillor Denno, Mr. Wright, Ms. Hunter, welcome to the program, and once again, thanks for being willing to engage with each other in this format.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me start, Pamela Hunter, with you. What are the significant votes that the council has taken in the past 2 years on which you would have voted differently from either Councillor Denno or Councillor Kessner?
I really can't think of any, actually, that come to mind that I would have voted against. 99% of the time, the council votes unanimously or in majority votes in favor of the legislation in front of them. I can't think of one thing specifically.
Mr. Wright, same question to you. Are there any significant votes that come to your mind where you would have cast a different vote from either of the two incumbents that, in a sense, you're running against?
I don't know about significant different vote or whatever, but I do believe that the issues with the creation of the land bank was discouraging that the legislation was created without funding, and it took until this budget season to finally get funded and get it stabilized to be up and running. In addition to that, I see the issue with the Planning Commission as something that is a bigger picture that needs to be addressed, and that's a zoning issue. That's we have zoning rules and regulations that the Planning Commission is there to keep businesses that are constructing or homeowners that are doing construction to keep them in a certain line.
And just to be clear, so everyone understands, when you refer to that, you're referring in particular what you're objecting to is the council trying to take on more of that authority over that commission. Is that right?
That's correct. It's been my experience that it's the zoning regulations that are causing the problems. And that's where the council can take action and bring up to date, for this day and age, our zoning regulations. And right now before them is the comprehensive plan, which includes many recommendations for those zoning changes. And I see that those things should be taken up as opposed to trying to take on more responsibility.
And Councillor Denno, similar type of question to you. Are there different or specific votes that you have taken in the past 2 years that you want to ask your two opponents here about how they would have voted? Do you want to put the question to them?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll turn that around just a little bit and point out that in last week's discussion, Ms. Hunter suggested that once a councilor votes to approve the city budget, that the councilor should then not sit in review of specific expenditures. And I think a perfect example of that is the proposed purchase of the take-home police cars that I voted against. Presumably, she would have voted for that if she had voted to support the budget as a whole.
For the whole budget up or down. Ms. Hunter, let me get your response to that one.
That's
then
actually not what I said. I said that when appropriations happen, and we were talking specifically about the police and unmarked cars, that the city budget, when in its entirety, when it's been voted on in the spring, includes light items that include take-home cars, unmarked cars, includes fire trucks, specific line items, estimate of cost. And so when one is disagreeable to expenditures and different light items and sensing that the budget is going to go through, including those line items that you would not agree to, and Lance has not agreed to these take-home cars, then do not overall vote yes for the budget when it those take-home cars are already included in that line item. That's in my opinion. One of the things that Jeff had made mention about reference to the land bank, the Planning Commission, when that came in front of the council, when I sat on the council in 2011, actually I did not vote for that. And I think that's a good example Jeff gave because I would have not have voted for that again.
Mr. Wright, you wanted to get in on this. You have a comment on what you just heard.
I think we should make it clear that there is a difference between the capital plan for purchasing equipment versus the budget. Mm-hmm. The budget, which again is just a plan and guidance, is more specific to the operational needs of the city. The capital plan is one that is just that. We try to forecast for the next 5 to 10 years on what our anticipated capital costs will be, and that's where equipment falls. So that does make sense to review it when it comes time for those appropriations to be authorized.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Lance Denno, Pamela Hunter, and Jeff Wright, candidates for the two at-large Syracuse City Council positions in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Let me stick with you, Jeff Wright. Again, thinking about the two incumbents and then your own positions, are there themes to the policy differences that you think exist between the two incumbents and yourself? I mean, give me some sort of big picture of understanding of, from a policy perspective, what the choice is here before the Democratic Party voters in this primary.
I think what you're going to find the difference between myself and the incumbents doesn't necessarily boil down to specific policy issues. I think in general that I share many of the same concerns, and I've had these discussions with Councillor Denno. My differences are my leadership and ability to bring consensus to try and resolve issues, come to conclusions that we can all move forward with in a constructive way for the better of the city of Syracuse. And that is my biggest difference right there.
And Ms. Hunter, similar question. Do you perceive any kind of themes of policy differences that you could articulate if voting for you as opposed to voting for the incumbents?
I think, again, it really goes back to, and this is not obviously a civics lesson, but it really goes back to how the council works and how they make their voting decisions. Most every piece of legislation, resolution, specifically the legislation that gets voted on by the council, is advanced to the council by the city, by the department heads and the mayor. I think relative to specific policy, if the council had its own legislative agenda, you would be able to see clearly from a community perspective what the counselors are doing themselves personally. I think it would be very hard for a community member to point out specific legislation someone who sits on the council now personally advance because it's really not happening.
So just to put this out to the three of you to make sure I'm going to get agreement on this, what I'm not hearing then is any kind of positioning among the three of you of I am the more conservative candidate here, I am the more liberal, I am the more progressive. You're kind of all in, you perceive yourselves to be all in the same vote policy-wise. Councillor Denno, is this true?
Well, I can't speak for them, obviously, but they've not indicated that they would have voted differently than Councillor Kessner and I did on any particular issues. So quite frankly, I think that suggests that Councillor Kessner and I are at least doing the job of reflecting the community in our public positions.
Well, let me try this a different way, and I'll stick with you, and I'll pose something pretty specific here. Looking at some of your votes, you voted against some of the cuts in city spending that the mayor has proposed. We talked about that last week, such as, for example, cutbacks in firefighting staffing. You also wanted to raise taxes in the city in order to pay for more education. You emphasized the importance of education last week. So regarding this deep financial problem for the city that all of you have agreed exists and is, you know, a major threat to the future of the city, and the mayor has been talking about this a lot for the last couple of years at least, how do you see the way forward financially for the city? How is the how is this going to work? Because it seems like it's a big problem.
It certainly is a big problem, and I would certainly agree with the mayor that the state of New York has to step up, particularly in regards to school funding. Remember, the city operational budget is $300 million. The school district operational budget is about $660 million. So it is a far bigger piece of the picture than the city's operational budget. And the current funding formula that is used by the state of New York disadvantages lower wealth districts. And the proposed resolution of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity in Albany that Governor Spitzer had started to implement 4 years ago actually went a good step of the way to addressing that problem. However, with the 2009 fiscal crisis, those proposed plans to meet the CFE requirements were dramatically scaled back by the state legislature, and that funding has any new funding there has dried up.
But the problem, it seems to me, if I could interject here with that, is that's an outside solution. I mean, it would be great for the city if the state came in with that. And the city can't really, aside from participating in a lawsuit, make that happen. So tell me how that leads to something the city can do.
Well, on the operational side, I think there are more things that the city can do. Quite frankly, the city of Syracuse does not now have and will not have the resources in its own tax base to fully fund the city school district. That's simply out of the question. However, in terms of the city operational budget, the city needs to take more responsibility for that. And here's where I disagree with the mayor. The mayor has said that most of our costs, our personnel costs, particularly the pension costs and health care costs, are out of our control and that they are Albany mandates. That's simply not accurate. The state pension system sets a floor for pension benefits for police and firefighters and other public employees, but it does not mandate the current level of benefits that public employees in the city enjoy. No member of the city's police or fire department retires under the terms of the state mandate. They retire under terms that were negotiated between their labor unions and the city of Syracuse over the last 40 years. And those benefits are not the fault of Albany. Those are expenses that we have incurred voluntarily. There are other resources that we need to pursue. And several of those were proposed by the council during the discussions over the closing of Fire Station 7. We proposed revenue increases to the administration that would have netted about $2 million a year, more than enough to keep the firehouse open and fully staffed. And those, you know, there's a wide range of revenue sources there, everything from, you know, increasing franchise fees and fees for use of the public sidewalk, those kinds of things, to parking ticket revenue. You know, so there are a lot of additional steps that the city can take and that the council has proposed. The idea that the council has not proposed anything, that there is no no council agenda, it's simply not accurate. The council has had an agenda on school funding, on Say Yes funding, on the land bank. You know, the council has come forward with agendas on a lot of these issues.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guests are Lance Denno, Pamela Hunter, and Jeff Wright. They're candidates for the two at-large Syracuse City Council positions in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Ms. Hunter and Mr. Wright were designated by the party committee to run on the party line, and the Democratic incumbent, Lance Denno, has challenged them in a primary. Well, Mr. Wright, let me continue with where we were before. How do you see this financial challenge for the city? What is the way forward? Are the kinds of things that Councilor Denno talked about really going to make the difference in the solution? How do you see this all working out?
Well, there's no doubt the state of New York has some responsibility here, but you know, the governor is not going to let its cities fail. However, the state of New York has the same fiscal problems as its municipalities. I see that, you know, in the city of Syracuse, there are several things that we have to look at. One issue is the amount of non-taxable property, basically, that you have close to 50% of our properties are not taxable for property taxes. We need to find a way to come to some reasonable means by which these organizations, these properties can support services that they're benefiting from. Obviously, there's a lot of not-for-profits that benefit our citizens more so than others, and I think we need to find a fair way to balance out how they can contribute to the services that are the public works services, the police and fire services. We have to look at how can we protect what we have as far as our economy goes. One of those areas, I believe, is we have to look at the state of New York to give municipalities the ability to give some sort of preferential treatment to those businesses that are doing business within our community, within the city of Syracuse, first and foremost, to at least keep them here. So let us – we spend a lot of money as government. Let's spend it local first. Let's find a way to reasonably – I mean, I'm not just saying carte blanche, give somebody business just because of the fact they're operational within the city limits. I'm saying let's make it reasonable. Let's make it competitive for them to continue to do business within our boundaries. We have to continue to think progressively. We are New York State. We are the progressive state of the union. We always have been. Let's continue that and continue to think of things – outside the box that can move us forward. We have to stabilize these revenues.
And Ms. Hunter, similar question. How do you see the city moving forward dealing with the financial problems?
Grant, you got to have a plan here. I'm listening to some of this conversation, and something that jumps out to me is you can't nickel and dime and put Band-Aids on some of these things. I think that it's like, you know, the roof in your house, and you got to make your plan to fix that roof before it caves in. And if you're talking about begging, robbing Peter to pay Paul, Councilor Denner was talking about with the firehouse, that firehouse has been needing to been, you know, fixed for years. Where is the capital plan putting money aside, you know, to fix these specific maintenance facilities? I don't think that garnering $100,000 here from franchise agreements or $300,000 there is going to get the money that we need to move the city forward. Continuing with the development that we see downtown, we have more cranes in the air than have been in the air for the past 20 years, creates economic development. It creates jobs. Having public partner, private partnership with different employers in the city to try to work with the education system to make sure that those jobs that are available in the city, people who live in the city, have the skills necessary to work for those jobs. That increases sales tax base. That increases people wanting to purchase homes and not renting, increases the sales tax or property tax base. I do think that talking about, you know, education, obviously, as most everyone knows, and sometimes they get tired of hearing me say that my son does attend the city school district. We can't wait for the campaign for fiscal equity to come down and say, help fix our problems now. It's going to take inside baseball in order to fix this. And unfortunately, most of the decisions that are made specifically relative to school budget do not fall on the Common Council. These are the school board commissioners who make these decisions. So while we can agree to appropriate funds, personally, someone can be actively meaning having their child actively, you know, actually going to the city school district is important. But I think that people are, it would be disingenuous to say that there's a significant amount that Common Counselors can do relative to the education system outside of what the school board commissioners are doing.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Lance Denno, Pamela Hunter, and Jeff Wright, candidates for the two at-large Syracuse City Council positions in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Let me follow on exactly the point that you brought up at the end there, Pamela Hunter. Councillor Denno is on record for this already, but I'll put the question out to the three of you going forward here on this question of education and funding. Would you be in support of a net increase in the city taxes in order to increase funding for education, Mr. Wright?
That's a very difficult question to answer yes or no to. It depends on the circumstances and, you know, what this money, you know, how much of the money that is. I will say that we definitely need equity when it comes to the state formula. And one of the good things is that there is an organization that one of the school board members, Pat Bodie, is a member of, trying to make sure that this gets fixed. We as a legislative body in the city of Syracuse most definitely need to support that.
Councillor Denno.
I think that was well said, actually. I would just point out the increase that I had proposed a couple of years ago was, in fact, revenue neutral so far as the homeowner was concerned, because it was offsetting a county tax reduction. And certainly I would support a similar move again should we see that there was going to be a reduction in some other tax levy. I would propose that that be offset by transferring the funds to the city school district.
And Ms. Hunter, where are you on this one?
I don't think I can agree to that, quite honestly. 45% of the people in Syracuse are homeowners, and they're paying the school tax for the 100% of the children, you know, to go to school. I don't think that it's fair for the minority to pay an increase. I think that there's going to have to be a different way, a different way forward. And I don't think that levying sales tax money from the county, which is not a guarantee, is necessarily the answer either.
Okay. And let me move forward here to another policy topic. The city's police force has been in the news a lot recently, and not all the stories are good. Pamela Hunter, I'll stick with you. How effectively do you think crime in the city is currently being addressed?
Well, I woke this morning by sirens at 3 o'clock this morning, which is a little disconcerting, knowing that there has been increased crime. I definitely think that moving to more community-based policing. I'm not talking about having officers walking the streets, but I do agree that garnering statistical information in order to pinpoint where crime is happening, I think that the police does that very well. And we have to, as citizens, take personal responsibility for safety as well. I think that there's some neighborhood watch groups that are doing an excellent job and advocating and helping with the police force and neighborhood type of crime. I think as the city is going through a turning point, a tipping point maybe, that we're going to have to weed out, you know, some of the things that are are happening in the city. They have this task force with ATF that they are rounding up, you know, gang members, and I think that's been helpful as well. I think more community-based, trying to get people engaged in their own safety is going to be important. We can't rely on, you know, X a number of officers all the time. We have to, you know, be responsible ourselves.
Mr. Wright, your sense of how crime's being addressed?
It's being addressed. Unfortunately, we have it. I firmly believe that the biggest problem we have right now is the fact that we have people afraid to come forward that have witnessed crime. We have to find a way to bring the police department back into this community as a friend. You know, these are our friends. These police officers do an amazing job with the work they have, but we need to find some way to connect them better with the community where these safety issues are, where these crime issues are really very serious, so that we can extract from people the information needed when crime happens. It's the community has to help. We have to have their cooperation. The police department needs them.
And Councillor Denham, your thoughts on the same issue?
Well, clearly we need to have a police department that is in touch with the community and that the community is comfortable going to. Unfortunately, the actions of officers in recent events have made that more difficult. And quite frankly, I think that Chief Fowler needs to be held accountable for the actions of the members of his department. When you look at the videotape provided by Centro, what makes those officers think that their behavior is
acceptable? And you're talking about the gentleman
acceptable?
In the wheelchair, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And what I'm talking about really is the fact that those police officers apparently feel that their behavior using the taser and dragging the gentleman is acceptable to the department. The chief has not made it clear that that is not acceptable. The ultimate cost to the city taxpayer is going to be tremendous, not specifically in this one case. I can't predict the legal outcome of what might happen here. But in the past couple of years, the city has paid out $6 million to female police officer claimants based on sexual discrimination within the department. We need to have a police chief that is holding his officers accountable to the public and responding to the Citizens Review Board. The police chief has not implemented the procedure required by the CRB legislation that has him, when he denies a CRB recommendation on discipline, that he document the reasons for that decision. And quite frankly, in terms of crime on the street, what we need is a more effective policing model. Crime is down across the country. Violent crime is down across the state. We have a problem here in Syracuse, and the police chief needs to implement a new model of policing, a different model of policing than what is currently being employed, to build that relationship with the community.
Well, we've got a whole other half-hour conversation just there, but we have to wrap it up now. Let me go to my final question. It's the elevator speech. In 30 seconds, tell me why you're the best candidate in the field of four, Ms. Hunter.
I have a track record, having been on the council, of passing legislation that positively affects the majority of citizens of Syracuse, and was able to unanimously pass legislation with the CRB and get the mayoral approval on that legislation, something that was intractable for 20 years, that current councilors who sit on the council now let this problem fester and did not address it. I think where we are now is unacceptable. We deserve, the citizens of Syracuse deserve quality representation and strength and leadership in moving our city forward. I do that every day, advocating for people with disabilities. I did that when I was on the council, and I think based on my background and experience, I am the right candidate to be your next councilor at large.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Based on my 34-year career with the city of Syracuse, eight of which served as administration with First Deputy Commissioner and Commissioner of Public Works, my leadership, my experience there, and the dedication of the city makes me the right candidate. I have worked with every neighborhood group going. I've worked with business owners to develop ways to get their projects done, dealing with issues in the neighborhood to come to consensus and get these issues resolved and continue to move forward to keep this city strong. I believe that I can bring all these assets to the council and be very good for the city and for its citizenry.
Councilor Dunno, you have the last word.
Thank you. I would simply point to my record of fiscal responsibility and leadership on important issues on the council. I would say that I have provided a check and balance when it's appropriate. And I think if that is what the public wants to see from the Common Council, they should support my reelection. And as an example of that, I would simply point out that the take-home police cars are in the capital five-year plan, $500,000 a year for each of the next 5 years. So if you agree with my position that we should not be spending that kind of money on that kind of perk, I would request your support.
That was Lance Dunno, Pamela Hunter, and Jeff Wright, candidates for Syracuse City Council in the upcoming Democratic primary election. Remember that the election is September 10th. It is for registered Democrats. Also note that you can find this conversation as well as the previous week's conversation with the candidates as a downloadable and a sendable podcast on WRVO.org under the Campbell Conversation tab. Thanks again to the three of you for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Grant.